Hello, world. This is Al Rod and Rain. Welcome to the Rod and Rain Show.
Hey, world. We're back.
So, tonight we are going to be discussing Tales from the Hood 2. We will be ranking the individual tales in this movie. So, we have a total of 5 tales, including the wraparound. And, we'll be ranking them from what we consider to be the worst
the most worst to the least worst.
To quote unquote best / least worst. So yeah, with this movie, I'm just going to say, I don't think any of these tales are great. Especially as a sequel to the first Tales from the Hood movie. If you watch Tales from the Hood 2 and just regard it as a movie in its own right, it's still awful. It's still
terrible.
It's still awful. But, you know, you can accept certain things when you don't look at it in context of being a sequel to the first Tales from the Hood. As a sequel to the first Tales from the Hood movie, this movie is a disgrace. This was just... As a sequel to Tales from the Hood.
A long-awaited sequel. They had decades.
Like 20 years removed. This bad.
Was the best they could come up with.
This is bad.
And came out within months. I think within 3 months of American Nightmares. Yeah. Which made more sense. Maybe not as a sequel to Tales from the Hood. But it did a better job of being a horror anthology that we know them for.
I think
coming out in the same year. So for this to come out, they call this a sequel, and the quality is what it is. In the same year that they gave us American Nightmares that we'll talk about later, and that I'm sure that conversation will be drastically different.
Yeah.
Like, I can't hold punches for them here. And we haven't even started ranking, y'all. It's a disappointment.
Yeah.
I feel like it's disrespectful to the first one follow it up with this.
It really is, to me. That's what adds so much, I don't want to say anger or anything. Like, I'm not that triggered by it. It is, at the end of the day, a movie. But
I am partially triggered in some points of this movie, but we'll get there.
No, I hear you, but there's an enhanced level of disappointment for this in particular because of what the first Tales from the Hood did. And to follow up with this and think it was in any way worthy of having that title is just laughable. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. I think all of these tales are lacking in some way or another. But there were some, at least 3, that I felt more worthy of being in the bottom 3 slots. But generally speaking, I don't think any of these tales were all that strong. So I'll start off by getting into my number 5, which was Date Night. I put it at the bottom because, one, none of these tales are all that scary, but I found that this particular story had maybe the least effort put into trying to have horror elements, because really all there was to it was just some vampire fangs on the girls, and we don't really even see them get a clear bite on either one of the guys, and they throw them in this dungeon with all of these other vampires who want to feed on them. But I think the big issue with this tale in particular is that once Kahad and his friend get to the girl's house, the tale just stops to watch them play this game. And it's none of that is engaging. You're just kind of waiting for the turn to happen. And I feel like I felt like the message was just, I don't know, after school specialists almost, in the way it was delivered. It's like, yeah, we know. date rape bad. I'm not saying it like it's, oh, I'm not trying to minimize it or anything. No. I know it is bad. It's just the way that it was done here. It was just so sloppy. Like, yeah, I guess it was just too in my face. Like, I would have liked to have thought about it a little bit or something. It was just like, I guess it was just too straightforward to me. And it was just the least engaging. I mean, we see two guys come to a house, they play the card game, and they get thrown in a dungeon. And that was essentially it. I felt like it was just the most low effort story in terms of its execution. But at the same time, I could see at the very least what utility it had for the plot, in the sense that I see how it connected to Mr. Sims trying to kind of furtively program the Robo Patriot to target Dumas Beach. There are maybe like two other stories where I don't see that connection at all. So at least this story kind of has that. You see how it's relevant to that end for Mr. Sims. But I still thought it was just the weakest out of the five in execution.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I sat and I bit my tongue on that one. I didn't want to interject because date night is not at my number five. My number five is The Medium. I cannot, for the life of me, connect this shit to the wraparound story. I have an idea. While some of the other stories are still very thinly connected, I can give a keyword, and I'll call those out as I rank them, like where I think the connection is. But I've identified, like, what was the reason this tale was here for it to help Robo Patriot end up targeting Dumas Beach. Mm-hmm. I could not come up with what the hell that was for The Medium, because it's about fucking hood niggas and a psychic. Mm-hmm. Psychics have shit to do with the hood, has shit to do with threats against America or how racism, like it. I cannot for the life of me figure out what Robo Patriot was supposed to get out of this tale to figure out that this makeshift MAGA-like politician should have been the bad guy and needed to be annihilated.
Yep.
The Medium does not give you that. It is literally an ex drug lord guy. They want to rob him. They end up killing him before they find out where his shit is. And then one of the hoodlums, so to speak, is watching a psychic show and says, aha, I've got an idea. Let's get this psychic to do a seance, to seance that shit, and we'll figure out where the money is that way. Please tell me what the fuck that has to do with anything.
Nothing.
And another reason it's at the bottom is because this story was like the only story to me that had an opportunity to have been a successful tale from the hood. Because it was the only story that had subjects in it that are giving you your hood elements.
That are from that environment.
That are from that environment. This is the only tale they had to do that with out of all the shit they wrote. Mm-hmm. And they decided to put a psychic in it.
Yeah.
And make it comedy.
Yeah. There's always something.
And fill it with stereotypes.
There's always something in the tales, most of them, that just trivializes everything and takes the stakes way down compared to where we were in Tales from the Hood 1.
Yes. So for me, it had to take the bottom spot because it dropped the ball on giving us an actual tale from the hood when it was the only opportunity to do so in this movie. And I cannot figure out what Robo Patriot was supposed to absorb from this. Yeah. I had no message. I had no hood. And the horror was more so comedy than horror.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to put it in five.
Which, you know, I'll just give it away. Medium's my number four. And I was tempted to put it at number five for that very reason. I just didn't see upon, this is maybe what, my third or fourth rewatch of this movie. I still don't make the connection.
Sadly, between, I think we've watched it more times.
You know what? I think we have. But yeah, I still cannot make the connection to, okay, Mr. Sims is trying to be sly and program the Robo Patriot to eventually target Dumas Beach. And I do not see how this story is in any way relevant to that to end Dumas at Beach. All. Or like how it is, how this story is going to be instrumental in getting the Robo Patriot on
and
that path.
I tried, I mean, we've seen this movie several times and I have tried to like stretch it. I'm like, maybe it's something about recidivism. Maybe it's something about,
it's like the only thing I could see in it is that the sidekick is a charlatan and maybe Mr. Sims sees some overlap between the sidekick's way of doing things.
And I feel like if that's the case, but I think it should have been a different tale.
Yeah, I agree.
Because tying that, because what happens with the sidekick, hood elements, yeah, just, it's such a stretch that, like, I can't even give it credit for that. Because, again, it's also disconnecting it from being a hood tale. Because the charlatan all of them are. But, like, if you want that to be the message to target Dumas Beach, like, the charlatan being the white psychic, like, I just felt like it should have been more hood integrated. Like, having one of the hood characters or something being a charlatan, maybe.
But if you're trying to get him to target Dumas Beach, I suppose.
But then if that's the case, the charlatan could have been a non-psychic. Why do you have to be a psychic?
I don't know.
I mean, in the hood. Like, when's the last time we have known?
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I understand.
Maybe we're not holding punches. And Mr. Sims choosing that particular tale, I think he has certain targets in mind as kind of an analog to Dumas Beach.
Would you call Dumas Beach a charlatan?
I mean,
compared to the psychic.
You could consider what he's doing with Robo Patriot as, I don't know, maybe a little hacky and not rooted in anything that is really going to help the community at large.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, because I'm like, for him, it was a logical development for him to have the Robo Patriot and want it to, you know, but yeah, I see what you're saying, the piece of like it being a development solely for like his profit and not to actually like protect America. That's the charlatan piece of it. Yeah. I get it, but no. I
could see it. I could see it.
Now that I
think about it.
Now that you think about it. But for me,
this is why it's at my number four.
No, it's at my number five because I don't want to give it credit for that. Because how many times would you have to see that movie for us to get to that point?
To me, yeah, I hear you. But the one thing I'll give the medium a little more credit for than, you know, my number five, Date Night. I think it's in my number four spot simply because I just saw more effort put into the story itself. It's like Date Night takes place at mainly one location that is not that interesting.
But the story's so damn like, goofy.
No, I hear you, but it's like at least they're making effort in developing something a little more with it. Like it starts out, they're interrogating their boy, and they cut to the sidekick live with his audience doing his thing, and I just... It's moving. It's got different settings. It's like, clearly there was a little more effort put into that one. Date Night was just so low effort garbage to me. It's just, it took nothing for them to do that. Nothing for them to film that.
With that, my number four is Date Night.
Okay, so we just.
So we I just guess. We just swapped. So
we
I,
do,
I
we
can,
tend
I
to
can,
do this a lot.
We do. So I can hop in on this. So Date Night is number four on my list. And going back to my criteria, I put it there because I was able to make a connection to the wraparound. So I did, yeah. You know, you understand, like, the misogyny of it that is what it wanted to target for Dumas Beach. So I was able to make that connection and get that, you know, message, misogyny bad, don't be just trusting people on the internet. Like, it, like you said, it's very blunt, it's in your face, there's no guesswork to it.
Nope.
But it's number four because it's not a tale from the hood.
It's not.
They're in this mansion with these rich vampire bitches playing Cards Against Humanity. And like,
that's the name of the game, Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah, who the hell is connecting to that from the hood? Just let me know. And the horror elements were weak. Like you said, mm-hmm. It was just the vampire chicks. And they put them in the dungeon and we don't even see them really get bit and then it's over. So that's why it's my number four. So we kind of flip-flop there, but we had very similar justifications. And Darren directed both of them. Just
that's interesting.
There's that.
Yeah. All right.
So four and five we're pretty on par. I feel like they're interchangeable kind of for both of us. Because now that you've talked me through the medium a little more, like, I could have made that swap. But I think for me, the medium still stays at the bottom because I just, that, the added cringe of the stereotypes they had that psychic going through once the dude possessed him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Like, he was doing the Italian, oh, you mooly, you fucking mooly. Like, he had him going through all these accents of stereotypes and shit as a black guy in the white psychic's body.
Yeah, I was going to say when...
And then the eating glass and glass houses just pisses me off.
That line is so...
It's the dumbest line ever. It's just so goofy and the dialogue is just so cringe at points that even with you now giving me the charlatan piece of like, oh, that's our connection to the wraparound, there's just so much in it that was just like, oh, what is this, Rusty? This is so not like you. I mean, Darren, really. Okay. This is so not like y'all. All right, so yeah, let's see how we doing the rest. So we're kind of neck and neck right now. Quick swap. So yeah, where are you at?
Yeah, I'm anticipating.
You think we're going to be close going through the rest?
I don't know. All right. I don't know. It really depends on how... I don't know. We'll see.
All right, well, it's time for you to do number three.
So my number three... is The Sacrifice. Sacrifice landed right in the middle for me. And I wanted to put it lower, but at the very least, I see some value in The Sacrifice really trying to say something. But I really feel like it muddles its message completely by the end of the tale.
So, let me just say, I also have The Sacrifice at number three. So I will just throw that in there and we can have a more lively conversation.
That's crazy.
As a reminder to y'all listeners, we do not share our lists with each other.
At all, we don't.
We rank these movies individually. Crazy. We write our notes. We write our justifications. And it is revealed to each other the first time live for y'all. I did not think you would have Sacrifice at number three.
Me neither.
But since we both do, it'll make this justification and talk a lot better because I know we're going to have a lot of very similar points of frustration with this story. And the only reason it's at three is because the other two are just a little more egregious at like how bad they are. Because it could have been at the bottom for me if those other two tales weren't here.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of alluding to in the beginning. I was like, my bottom three really could all compete for five.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't even know where to begin with this. It's number three, but it's number five. Mm-hmm. My biggest gripe, and I have said this before, we have watched this movie several times. I am very... protective of our history, I guess, is how I want to go with it. And I am just very disheartened when the creative liberties change a painful history so drastically that it almost disrespects it. And so in this one, it's called The Sacrifice because the twist on this story is that Emmett Till's death, the death of the four little girls from 16th Street Baptist Church, the death of a lot of our civil rights events or figures were sacrifices. And some of the, especially the main story, Emmett Till is the main story of this sacrifice. And basically Emmett Till is making this choice to like now not want to die back in his time, which would rewrite the rest of history. And it just feels so disrespectful to what he actually endured. That was not a choice that he did not sacrifice himself for. He was taken against his will and murdered. And to take that and twist it and say that, oh, that was a choice for him. He made that decision to die for us to have the civil rights we have now. I don't like throwing that and the four little girls, like those experiences in the same pot as like a Malcolm X or a Martin Luther King Jr. who knew what they were up against and were making a conscious decision to be a figure and a voice to fight for civil rights, knowing that that would put their head on a platter if they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They weren't out there like, you know, saying, hey, kill me today, make a sacrifice. But the work they were doing, they understood the price that they were willing to pay being that figure. And they were conscious in what they were doing for civil rights.
They knew that what they were doing made them targets by some other group.
Exactly. Emmett Till and those four little girls were just living, and there were racists out there who did not like a very miniature thing or an entire group of people, and they murdered them. And they had no chance to even make a choice to want to live, let alone sacrifice themselves at 15 and 10 and 8 years old to say, okay, I'm going to die in this fucking church or get beat to death because it's going to move my people forward. Those were not choices. Those were not sacrifices. Those were murders and very painful losses and things in history. And if there were a sacrifice in there, it would have been Mammy Till's sacrifice for us to see her son the way he looked when they put him on display. That would have been the sacrifice. But to tie Emmett Till's death as the sacrifice that needed to be considered in order for our current civil rights situation to be what it is was just disrespectful to me, on top of a million other things in this story. But that's like my number one trigger, is saying that the sacrifice here was Emmett Till had a choice to make, live or die.
Yeah, I get it. I 100% agree. I think sacrifice in the context of that real historical event is a misnomer. It wasn't a sacrifice.
It was not a sacrifice. Yeah. It was a kidnapping and a murder.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you're going to rewrite it that way and have Emmett Till have to die again, but take this guy from the real world, like the current world, with him instead of allowing this man to change his ways and hopefully rewrite and bring some progress to our people now.
So this is my biggest point of contention with this story, and where I think it completely drops the ball and muddles its messaging. Because throughout the entire story, well, I mean, in the beginning of the story, you see this, I forget the man's name.
Henry.
The character's name is Henry, okay. Yeah. So he's a black politician who is supporting this Republican Colonel Sanders-esque
William Cotton.
That's right. He's supporting this this politician William Cotton, who's running for governor, and he's of course in favor of closing polling places in mostly Democratic districts, which is, you know, always kind of code for stifle the black vote.
Yeah.
And Henry, you know, he has to smile and shuck and jive for this guy and support everything he's doing.
And he's calling it like free thinking. I'm allowed to think for myself. I'm choosing to be a black Republican, and you know, this is my decision and you always taught me to like make my own decisions or whatever. Yeah, yeah, it, all that BS.
And just as an aside, it always just blows my mind that when you're a free thinking black Republican, all of your thoughts happen to completely align exactly
with the way with the Republican Party.
With, you know, the just backwards Republican thought that just stifles black anything.
Right.
It's just so interesting that your thoughts are so free that right. they go straight to this extreme in particular.
This cult like party over yeah. here. Yes.
This very specific extreme, mind you. It's not like
you're just actual extreme.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, free thought clearly has limits, but yeah. So he's one of those. He's kind of like a Byron Donalds, pretty much. And throughout the story, you know, we see Emmett visit him in his modern day and gives a Henry's constantly getting warnings that if Emmett doesn't
sacrifice himself, in his timeline,
then there will be an alternate history that will emerge in his now present day, in which the changes that happened as a result of Emmett's sacrifice will not have come to pass.
And a big piece of this is Henry is married to a white woman.
Yes.
So Emmett is revealing himself to the wife, mm-hmm. and her concern and how it's presenting itself is she's pregnant and they've apparently lost a child before. And so she's having this fear of if Emmett Till doesn't die, we lose this child I'm pregnant with because us being an interracially married couple will not exist. Mm-hmm. This timeline will change and we're going to be going back to like, you know, coloreds and whites and all of these things. And we will lose this child if Emmett Till doesn't make his sacrifice. And you, Henry, have to acknowledge that. Go talk to him and convince Emmett to go back in his time and die again so we can have the life we have. It's so fucking dumb.
Yeah.
But basically, go convince Emmett Till to go die again
mm-hmm.
so that we can keep our baby and be okay.
And this is my issue, because at the climax of this story, we have this racist squad show up at Henry's house.
It's almost like a KKK squad.
Yeah, it's like a KKK squad. And they basically come after Henry, assault his mom, and Emmett's pleading with him, basically saying, you have to make changes.
You have to change.
You
yes.
have to change.
The words come out of Emmett's mouth. You have to change.
Yes. And what and the thing is, it's supposed to prompt in Henry a shift so
to be
that
like,
he can
I
go
cannot
back.
Help this man become governor.
Exactly.
That's you're in this line of thinking that after hearing Emmett and realizing like, hey, I do have privilege as a black man in, you know, this movie came out in 2018. As a black man in 2018, I have certain privileges. And there are, I have the freedom to make decisions that can help my people move forward. And the role I'm in right now is working against that.
Mm-hmm.
And so after talking to Emmett, I have an opportunity to correct this line of thinking and I can make a change now before this man becomes governor.
Yeah. And that whole time during the climax, they're building him up.
To be able to be like, you know what, you're right, I'm sorry, I quit, I'm not supporting this guy, I'm thinking that like he's gonna agree with Emmett and be like, you are right, I can't keep doing this, I am dropping from his campaign right now, I'm gonna change my ways. That's what the buildup of this climax is, where you think it goes, but where does it go, Rod?
Yeah,
tell us where it goes.
But then something happens where it goes beyond just change for whatever reason. And Emmett says, you have to sacrifice.
You have to die.
What?
So
we're seeing this alternate history start to converge with Henry's present reality. And he's getting beaten by, you know, this...
Yeah, this KKK squad is coming to attack him. His wife is spitting on him, saying, don't you ever touch a white woman.
Yeah.
I've never been your wife. If your seed's inside me, it will fucking kill you. Like, all of this is happening simultaneously while Emmett is trying to convince him to change his ways. But then it turns into, no, you've got to sacrifice with me. Come die.
It just doesn't
And then
mix.
Your present timeline will be better.
Yeah, your present timeline will be salvaged. But Henry takes the beating and the whole reality reverts back to what it was, but he's still dead.
Yes, so now Henry has taken the sacrifice.
But he gets no opportunity to actually implement the change that they
inspired him to.
He didn't get the
change. He got to die. His wife is still now pregnant. This Colonel Sanders, William Cotton, still going to get to be governor the next day because he didn't come back and come tell him off and be like, wait a minute.
He's still going to have the same horrible policies.
Exactly. Like,
so
it didn't change. Nothing in that current timeline
got no opportunity
was impacted
to change anything
by him dying. But his mom was proud of him.
It's crazy.
His mom looks down at him and is like, I'm proud of you, son, for fucking getting beat to death.
Yeah.
I am so confused.
When that happened, I was just like, I don't get this at all.
I don't get it. And the only thing I got out of this story, and again, we have this at 3. It could have been at 5. It's not at 5 for the reason we've already shared, but it really is a terrible story. But I had it down. The only connection, this story was only told because the racism needed to be what Robo-Patriot targets in Dumas Beach.
Yeah.
But the rest of that shit, I'm like, we had to go through all of that for Robo-Patriot to be like, oh, okay, racists, kill them. Like, what?
Yeah. All that digging into a real historical event to offer this as
yes,
the
and
messaging.
To so like disrespectfully alter that historical event.
It just
to bring it to that climax.
Yeah, it unnecessarily laces that story with historical baggage that it didn't need.
It didn't need.
And part of it to me is that it was a story that almost said something worthy.
Yes, if you had just let him come back and go tell off Colonel Sanders and be like, I quit, I cannot support you, this is wrong, me and my wife are moving out, he's living in a plantation home, we didn't put that in there. Like, all he had to do was go back and be like, me and my wife, I can't support this, I'm off your campaign trail, we've got to make changes, I'm taking my wife away from here, and I'm going to go find a different way to help my people. If he had the opportunity to do that, to fix his timeline, I wouldn't have so many problems. I'd still have problems with the sacrifice piece of the historical part of the story, but I wouldn't have had as many problems with this story otherwise.
Yeah.
My only issue would have been Emmett Till's death being called a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, the whole fucking story infuriates me because the man ends up dying instead of making the change that Emmett Till asked him to do before he asked him to die.
Yep.
It's like, how do you ask him to change and then ask him to die in the same damn like monologue? I don't understand.
Yeah, exactly. The story itself is begging for him to change.
His mom is begging for him to change.
Yeah,
but when he dies, everybody's just so proud of him.
The narrative doesn't give him the opportunity to change. And then everyone looks almost happy about it. And it's like, I don't know. It just leaves us with kind of a deflated message of, yes, black people only offer their dead bodies and nothing more to a movement.
Yeah, it's like, people don't care about us until we're dead. Like, just, that's, I guess, what you were ultimately trying to get at, Rusty, but oh my god, the way we got there was infuriating.
Yeah, I thought it was a missed opportunity to be an interesting inverse of what happened in the last story in Tales from the Hood, because I felt like this was an opportunity where you had a protagonist in this story that could have been successfully reformed, as opposed to how we left with Crazy K, who unfortunately, you know, his intervention in the sensory deprivation places didn't work to reform him, whereas here Henry could have been reformed and actually went out into the world and did the work.
Yes, and Robo-Patriot still could have targeted Dumas Beach off of the imagery we got of Colonel Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
Like, we didn't need Henry. Like, it wasn't Henry that was training the Robo Patriot from that story. It was Colonel Sanders. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. William Cotton. Y'all know. I'm sorry. He's got the white hair and the mustache.
If you've seen the movie,
he's Colonel Sanders. But yeah, like, he's the character in that story that Robo Patriot is supposed to be getting trained off of.
He's targeting.
So, I mean, Henry could have had the successful ending, and Robo Patriot could have had the same outcome of racism, bad, look for that in Dumas Beach.
Right. Yep.
Whew. All right. So that's number three, y'all. That's number three.
That's the one I probably had the most to say on because I felt like it had potential. A little more.
It's the only one that was tied to, like, real world events, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right. So, I guess, are we back to you? Because I revealed that it was my number three. Yeah, so we're back to you for number two. So, Let's see how we're doing. I'm interested now because we're real close.
We are.
What you got for number two?
My number two is Good Golly. Good Golly is my number two.
Okay.
I put this at number two because I felt like it had some interesting messaging, and I felt like it was the one tale that, at least for a long stretch, I could just absorb it for what the narrative was saying. But when we see the big, giant golly, it just goes off a cliff. It really does. I don't know why I have this so high. It's just the other ones.
The other ones are just so
bad.
I told you, this conversation is really just the worst of the worst to the least worst of the worst.
I mean, good.
Like, just there is no best.
The thought of me saying Good Golly is number two, like, you can tell I'm just fishing for something to merit this being at number two, and I've got nothing. It's just not the
like,
other
It's almost
30.
Like we just have 5A through E.
I've got nothing. It's not the other three stories. That's all I got. This shit is a mess, man. Like,
I'll let you finish. I can't even really jump in because it's actually not
okay,
my number.
So we kind of gave the rest of your list away.
Yeah. Man.
But, man, I'm just like, I think they're saying some interesting things about, well, like in the dialogue between Zoe and, gosh, what's her name?
Oh man, we always
forget. I'm not blanking
on
the other girl's name. The golly obsessed girl.
Yeah, Audrey.
Zoe and Audrey. I think they're saying some interesting things, just in their friendship. I think I mentioned before that in the way they just converse with one another, you can see that, yeah, they're friends, but it's kind of a surface level friendship because I got the sense that Audrey kind of kept Zoe around just for her
tokenism.
Because you have Audrey just going so, like, crazy for this gollywog, not really realizing how the image is associated with negativity. And, I mean, she's at this museum of negrosity, and she's just enamored by shit she sees there without acknowledging any of the pain behind any of it. And Zoe's kind of just along for the ride, not really processing it until they go there later that night and they find that book. And it's so casually mentioning nigger. And she's like really processing and taking that in. And it's painful to her. But Audrey is just still so obsessed with obtaining this Gollywog because it gave her comfort when she was young. She has this nostalgia attached to it, but it's all on the surface. She doesn't know the history behind it or anything. It's just this surface level object, and it's not really rooted in anything that's all that substantive. And I thought it was just that bit of it was some interesting commentary. I think where I get lost is where the Gollywog becomes life-size and starts fucking Audrey, impregnates her, and she pops out Gollywog babies.
And dies.
I'm lost. I don't know what that's saying.
I agree with everything you just said, but my number two is Robo Hell.
Okay.
Just going back to my criteria, it was not the least, but compared to Good Golly, it had less horror to it for me. So I docked it for that. You could see it coming from 1,000 miles away with the Dumont Beach, Robo Patriot, when they turn it on to like demo how it, you know, figures out who the bad people are. Of course, when it finally turns on its maker, it calls him Robo Patriot identifies dumbass bitch. And it's like, we saw that the moment we saw the name of the industries when the movie damn started.
Yeah.
We already knew what that play on words was going to be. So that just wasn't clever. I put it at number two just mostly because, one, not all of the tales helped me understand how Robo Patriot was able to identify Dumas Beach. I mean, there was enough there, but because not all of the tales to me at the time when I wrote this list connected to the wraparound, I couldn't give the wraparound more points because not everything I felt like tied back to it, especially speaking of the medium. It was just corny and obvious to me. Okay. I also put it at number two, because as much as I love Keith David, him as the devil, I don't know if he was over directed or what, but like his poopity pops and shits and doo-doos just were not as subtle and like creepy and devilish.
Yeah. Robo Hell is my number one, but I will concede that one thing that just kind of threw me off, especially the first time watching this, is Keith David is in no way even trying to keep his performance consistent with what Clarence Williams did at all. It is a totally different.
He almost felt like a circus ringmaster to me.
Yeah, it's a totally different interpretation.
Like his delivery, his tone, he was like, it'll be quite amazing. Yeah. Like he just felt announcery.
Yeah, and once I wrapped my head around it, okay, he's not
even attempting he's not going to be that
to do the same performance. So I was like, okay, I could ride with it. It's like Keith David is just going to bring his thing
he's
to it.
He's
going to
be whatever Rusty wants him to be, really.
And after a while, I was kind of just rolling with it, and I started to kind of like it, actually.
I will say I did like that his suit got redder.
That was a nice touch.
I thought that was cool. Kind of clever.
That was cool.
But overall, I had to put it at number two because it was just a bit corny. It wasn't clever. It was just so damn obvious.
You just said something was clever. The suit change.
No, I'm talking about the whole thing. the twit, like the Robo Patriot targeting Dumas Beats, like not clever. Like I know they played it like, oh man, he's gonna turn on him and that's gonna be the thing. And it's like we knew dumbass bitch was coming out of somebody's mouth and he was gonna be the bad guy. Like he's the one who's going to hell. Like those were like probably the first two things you knew as soon as the movie started.
Yeah.
And, so I just had to give it number two for that, because at least, like, in the first Tales from the Hood, the reveal of, like, Welcome to Hell and, like, they're on, you know, the trip down, you know, the deeper they go into the funeral home, the close, you know, the hotter it's getting and they get to hell, like, that whole reveal and all of that, like, that was a twist. Mm-hmm. Because you really think they're just in a funeral home to pick up drugs and this mortician's just crazy and telling them these scary stories until whatever happens. But when you find out, like, oh, there is no drug pickup and he's the devil and this is day, you're like, holy shit. Like, especially the first time, like, that you don't see coming from starting that movie. Tales from the Hood 2, you got the same outcome of, okay, there's going to be a devil and a hell reveal. We know that. That's going to be your norm for a Tales from the Hood movie. But you know exactly who, what, and how, like, when the movie fucking starts. You're like, oh, Dumas Beach? Okay, so somebody named Dumb is going to be called Dumbass Bitch. He's probably the one going to hell. And Keith David is the devil. So how are we going to get him to hell? That's the only piece we need to know. It's like, what's the reveal to hell going to look like? Yeah. But everything else, that whole outcome is right there on its sleeve in the beginning. So it's like, this is the only one where I'm like, it was clear as day. Who was going to hell and who was the devil? Just hurry up and get there. So that's why I put it at number two.
Actually, yeah, I think I have it at number one because that's where the movie ended and I put out my misery.
The movie's finally over. All right. That's what ended the movie. That's hilarious.
I will say, just in analyzing this particular wraparound in Tales from the Hood 2, I notice what is just severely missed coming off of Tales from the Hood 1. I think, I'm not saying you have to necessarily do this, but I think an element that just contributes to Tales from the Hood 2 just generally not feeling in any way attached to the hood at all, is that the wraparound does not deal with subjects from the hood. It is not, take place in the hood.
And why it's number two. I think
Tales from the Hood, the framing is, has to do with people in the hood.
The hood.
So it's
out in a tent, so in, it's the, like when you in
go,
a field.
No matter what story you go into and come out of, in the wraparound, you're back to the hood context.
In the hood. Yes.
And Tales from the Hood 2 does not give you a hood context to wrap the stories around in. And I think that is what was severely missed here.
But
and
you have it at number one.
I have it at number one because
why do you have it at number one? Because you don't look like you know right now.
I guess I just like Keith David. I mean, it's not consistent with Clarence Williams' performance, and that's a little distracting at first, especially because, I mean, you gave him the same name. I think what you could have done was just establish that the devil could inhabit different people just so you didn't have to even worry about that as a thing.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even realize that the first one, his name was Mr. Sims, too.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
you didn't have to make him the same.
Yeah, he could have been something else.
But I did eventually just warm up to it, and I guess it's Keith.
So
David.
Keith David is what brought it to number one.
Keith David brought it to
Keith
number
David
one.
Saved it for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the thing is, I do kind of like the idea of the Robo Patriot.
That's fine, but
it just needed different tales.
Yeah, so but you have it at number one because of how it was here in this movie. Not what it could have been.
I think conceptually Robo Patriot works. It's the execution of it. And that's the case for all the other stories here. I feel like there are some things that work. It's just it was a story that I think just needed a few tweaks to really be on to something. But you're definitely right in your gripes with it. I mean, you see the dumbass bitch shit coming
pan across the sign. It says Dumas Beach Industries. And the only thing you can think of when you see that is dumbass bitch. Yeah. Like, nobody's name is just going to be Dumas Beach.
And it's such an old joke because
they might as well just name this nigga D's Nuts.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, there were commercials that did the whole, it's Dumas, not Dumas.
Yes, yes.
This has been done before.
It's not new.
Yeah. So it's just the thought of even doing something like that.
It was clever.
You are nowhere near as clever as you think you are right now.
Right.
So, yeah, Robo Hell is number one just as a formality. I in no way value or respect it as a piece of individual storytelling.
Okay. I don't. So, with that said, my number one is Good Golly.
Okay.
Because there are pieces of it that I enjoyed. I feel like this is the one story out of all five that, with some tweaking, like you said about Robo Hell, with some tweaking, it could have worked.
Yeah.
It had some horror to it.
I agree.
It could have been tied to the hood a little more, but, you know, Tales from the Hood 1 had a story that was kind of like this out in the country, too, with the one with the dolls.
When I say that, I don't want to
It doesn't necessarily, have to be in the hood.
Yeah, I don't want to communicate that I'm, like, trying to limit Rusty's vision in any way. It's right. Like,
the setting doesn't necessarily have to be in the hood.
It doesn't. But it has to be relevant.
But
to
the message or the topic or the issue that it's addressing should be relevant to people in the hood.
Yep.
That's my thing.
If you're like, gonna name it, if you're gonna
issue of people in the hood.
If you're gonna title your movie Tales from the Hood, I think the stories relevant. Have to be in some way relevant.
It needs to be relevant to experiences or issues faced by those in the hood.
Yeah.
Especially if your setting is not gonna be in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that with Good Golly, because profiting and fetishizing black culture, black history, mm-hmm. like that is very much an issue of those in the hood
mm-hmm.
and those outside of the hood. Just, you know, but yeah. If you're calling it Tales from the Hood and you want it to be relevant to people in the hood, yes, taking something that is popular, high culture in the hood, profiting off of it, that is an issue that's relevant to them, and that's what Good Golly was tackling with Audrey.
Mm-hmm.
So I can give it its credit for that, because I could tie the issue to the hood. I could see what they were doing with that Museum of Negrosity, because there are, you know, like your standard Black history, African American history museums, and that's where, you know, we have the collections of everything that shows our historical experiences. And then you have those who come in and want to fetishize it.
Yep.
And colonialize it, colonize it, you know. So all of those elements are there in the story, and that can have a horror twist to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see what they were trying to do. I'm also there with you, though, like when he then blew up and then like impregnated her, I was like, okay, what? It's the story I can make the most sense of out of these five, at least.
Yeah, it's that moment when all the gollies pop out of her belly.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're about to say.
And she's just like, my gollies! Yeah. Like, oh my gosh! And, I mean, in a sense, in that moment, she gets what she wants. She's surrounded by nothing but these symbols. But at the end of the day, it's like, that's all you have. It's a symbol of something, and it's abstract, but there's really no appreciation for the history or pain behind it. It's just, right. Audrey was all about the object. She was, and all it's like about, you're surrounded by the her object own
nostalgia,
now.
Comfort. It was there to exist to just please her, meet her,
yeah,
her need. Mm-hmm. And so when she's like popping all the gollies out, she's like feeling personally fulfilled. Like, oh, all of the gollies are here. I've got a plentiful amount of for my own pleasure. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like what we are to a lot of people outside of our group.
Yeah, and I think when you go back and just analyze the dialogue they had when they came back to the museum later that night, and they were just talking about just the dynamics in their respective interracial relationships, they didn't even value each other as companions beyond just a surface level fetishizing of each other.
Exactly.
I mean, just the way they talked to each other, and the way they talked about how Zoe's brother talked to Audrey, like calling her his snow bunny. Shit like yeah. that. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's the appreciation doesn't go beyond just a surface level, just fetishism
and like dominating mm-hmm. another culture.
Yeah.
Conquering it, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I could see what the message was, what they wanted us to get out of that. And I thought it was okay.
It's more layered than Robo Hell.
Exactly. Out of all five, it didn't trigger me as much. It didn't make me angry. I could see what message they were trying to give more than the others. And now that we've kind of talked through the whole ending of that story, I can make even more connections. But I think it was just the most competent at being a tale from the hood. Mm-hmm. And also still matching the wraparound of what would Robo Patriot get out of this.
Yeah.
So that's why it's at number one.
Yeah, I think that's a fair placement after talking it out. Yeah. Oh. That's our ranking, I feel like.
Glad we got this one out the way. Because I think Tales from the Hood 2 out of all of these is the most frustrating for us. Because it's the sequel, the direct sequel yep. to the first one.
That's exactly what it is. Something about Tales from the Hood 2, it just seems visually just so much brighter.
I was going to say that. The quality of it, it's bright as hell. The opening, we didn't even talk about the opening and the dancing skeletons with the stuff. Oh, terrible.
And another thing we didn't really talk about too is that the score is nowhere near as atmospheric as the first Tales from the Hood.
It is not. And
the score and the soundtrack. Like Tales from the Hood, that damn Spice
had a
One
soundtrack.
That
yes.
Spice One song is so synonymous with Tales from the Hood.
This shit
to me.
Ends with a rock song, y'all.
Yeah.
Tales from the Hood 2 ends with a rock song called Welcome to Hell.
That Spice One track and Tales from the Hood, that is just so, like, I cannot think of that movie without thinking of that track. Because that's the track that plays when Crazy K is in
the
spinneriometer.
Yeah. The NyQuil machine is what I call it, because this is what that liquid looks like. All right, I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm done. You got our rankings.
That's our ranking of...
It's Tales from the Hood 2.
All of the stories in Tales from the Hood 2. Let us know if you agree, or if you thought we were way off base, and if you think this movie wasn't worth ranking at all, because it was all stupid as fuck.
I can't wait to see where this movie lands when discuss all three Tales from the Hood and American Nightmares, ranking the movies as just a whole. Mm-hmm. if it's going to beat out Tales from the Hood 3. I can't wait to see where we put it.
Yeah. We'll see you again. Same. Can we say? No, we can't say same bat cave, same bat channel.
No. Yep, but you'll hear from us again soon. You're going to be hearing these all week. So.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for the next episode.
Be well. Take care of each other. Love, live life. This is Rock.
This is Rain.
Peace out.